It smells like grass. The neighbors here, the neighbors, I have a lot of neighbors actually on this side of the house. There is a park with lots and lots of small houses. And in between the houses is grass. It's very, very nice. And so they have been mowing the grass for the entire morning because it's a pretty big park. And so you have that very springtime, summertime smell of freshly mowed grass in the air. I love it. It is a gorgeous day. The temperature is perfect. It's about 22 degrees, I think. The sun is shining. You have some very light clouds. It is a great day to be walking outside. It's also a wonderful day for biking, which I did yesterday. I went to the zoo, Burgers Zoo near Arnhem, or actually in Arnhem, but outside of the city. And as you know, I have a subscription to the zoo, so I can always go there whenever I want. Of course, in the winter time, it is not as interesting as in the spring and summertime because the animals are in their winter shelters. And also the weather is not so nice. So it usually takes about an hour and 10 minutes for me to bike to that zoo. And if it's cold or raining, then it's not my favorite thing to do. But yesterday was another wonderful day as well. And I had a special reason to go to the zoo, because while I was browsing through my Instagram feed, I saw an update of the zoo telling their followers that there would be an educational event taking place 3 times in the next few weeks. And during that event, volunteers would guide you through the, let's say, the section of the what they call Burgers Ocean, which is their aquarium sea life type of part. And they would tell you how they manage that big sea world, basically, which has a huge tank with sharks and then some smaller ones with other types of fishes. And what they're most famous for is that they have a tropical coral reef that is artificial to a certain extent, in the sense that they have grown this over the, I think, last 20 years or so, maybe even more. And it's been a major success. It is one of the big, if not the biggest, artificial coral reef in Europe. And it's so successful that they are even harvesting that coral reef several times a year to donate specimens to other zoos so they can add to their collection or strengthen their coral aquariums. So I saw this invitation. It was only $2. I immediately reserved. That's the downside of the Instagram algorithm, is that I saw it a few days after it was posted. But thankfully there was one spot that was still open for yesterday at the end of the day. So the zoo closes at 6 and the tour would start at 5. So it's about a 45-minute tour. So at the beginning of the week, I usually prepare for the work and I record my podcast and everything. So I moved everything aside, at least for the last few hours of the day, and I decided to give myself some time off and bike to the zoo. And I thought it was the best thing I could have done with that day, because, man, it was so interesting. And it was amazing to see basically the back lot of, it's like if you go to Universal Studios, they have the back lot tour and they put you in a small train and you can see, for instance, the whole the city set that was used for Back to the Future and also for many other television series. So you can see all the, you know, the streets and the houses and the park. It's so amazing. This was similar, but then for the for Burgers Ocean, so you get to see the shark tank from up above, and it is literally behind the scenes, because all these big tanks are built up as a stage, and to a certain extent there's lots of lights that not only put the, you know, put some depth in the display. So for instance, the Shark Tank is big, but they make it look even bigger because there are lots of lights in the foreground where they created, in a certain way, a stage. There is a rack of a boat on the right, and then some other props in the water on the floor. But that's only if you look from above. You can see it's only the first few meters away from the huge viewing screen, which is a, what is it, a 32 centimeter plexiglass like plastic wall, and it's huge. I mean, it's the size of a, you know, two stories high. It is amazing. And so the fish will swim sometimes in the foreground and there are lots of lights, but then the more they move to the back, there is actually, from above, you see that there is a piece of cloth that spans the entire length of the tank, and it stops the light that lights up the foreground from leaking to the background. And so when the fish swim to the back of the pool or of the tank, they seem to disappear in the dark, and it makes it feel very much like something you would see in real life. And so that was fun to see. It also lots and lots of information about how they filter the water. So they make their own seawater, which is something I never realized. I figured you just, you know, just go to the North Sea here in the Netherlands and you fill up your tank and then you put it in the, but that's not how it works, because of course the seawater is full of organisms, and if you transport it over a certain amount of distance, then the life inside that water, if it has no oxygen and anything, no movement, it will die. So instead they are making their own ocean water, which also has the added advantage of them being able to control the quality very precisely. And this is most likely the reason that their coral reef is so incredibly successful, because they have an incredible control over the quality of the water. And coral reefs are extremely vulnerable. This is also, unfortunately, why in large parts of the world they are getting extinct, and they're dying because of the rising temperatures and the pollution. But in the zoo, in Burger Zoo, they are able to exert so much control over the climate and the temperature and the quality of the water that the coral reef is growing, and it's just totally amazing. So they showed that. They also even showed us behind the scenes of the fish hospital. So when fish get sick, they immediately get quarantined, and they try to heal the fish. They are in contact with all the other zoos in the Netherlands and in Europe in case they need expert advice, and they can share experiences. And it was just a 45 minute tour, but I learned so much, and it makes me look at the Burgers Ocean. The next time I'll visit, I'll look at it in a completely different way, because I know how much work it takes to keep all that alive and thriving. Very, very, very cool. Took lots of photos. I spent about an hour in the zoo beforehand, and I was actually planning on recording this episode of the podcast at the zoo, but I just didn't feel like it. I was tired after an hour and 10 minutes of biking, and I just needed some time to get acclimated to the zoo. So instead I walked around and took some photos. I keep being amazed at the quality of the photos that you can take with the iPhone 15 Pro Max, especially the zoom lens is stunning, and also the ability to artificially blur the background so it makes animals stand out so much more. It's not perfect. There's a lack of, very annoying lack of manual control over the photos that you take. So as long as you let the iOS do all the calculations, it will actually give you good photos, but sometimes there's just this particular thing you want to do and it doesn't focus, or it switches between the lenses, so you're zoomed in and then all of a sudden it decides, well, maybe you want to use this lens. No, I wanted to use that one, the one that I had just selected. And it does these weird things. Another thing I noticed was that the iPhone gets extremely hot when you're taking a lot of pictures. I thought it would only get warm from filming, because obviously when you film, there are 24 high-resolution images that it has to process and store, because even for videos, Apple does a lot of processing. It does HDR, so it takes multiple versions of the same frame, and then it calculates the best result. It's like an intermediate that you see. But apparently for photos, it also does so many calculations that after about half an hour, the phone was really hot in my hands. I had to remove its protective casing so it could cool off a little bit better. And that really shocked me. I had no idea that just taking pictures would put so much pressure on the CPU or the whole processing of the device. Yet another thing to keep in mind when I am going to use the iPhone for future productions is that I will probably at one point will have to get myself one of those power banks that I can click to the back of the phone to recharge it, because I will never make it through a day of taking pictures and filming without extra power. For normal use, it's perfect. It's a big phone, so it lasts me an entire day and then some. It's not as long-lasting as my old Android phone, and it's a pretty big Zenfone 6, which lasts for 2 to 3 days if I use it normally. That's insane. I don't have to recharge it at the end of the day. I do have to do that with the iPhone. But nevertheless, I'm glad I took the bigger model, because nothing is more annoying than when you're in the middle of a day and you're filming and shooting like I did last week at the Fantasy Festival, and then run out of power and have to wait for an hour for your phone to recharge. So, learned some more stuff. And while I was on my bike, going back and forth to the zoo, I had plenty of time to think. And this brings me to what I would like to share with you today. And it has to do with the way I feel called to optimize to a certain extent my efforts, and also to hopefully prevent something that I've been struggling with for my entire life, and that is to have way too many plans and ideas than I can actually execute, and to have an added tendency to underestimate the amount of resources and energy it takes to do stuff. And I've always been someone who feels like, well, if there's one reason for God to give us eternal life, is that one lifetime is simply not enough to do everything I would like to do. And there's so much more that I would like to explore and see and learn, and so many more people to meet. But I can't possibly do this in my lifetime. And so if life is eternal after death, then I am going to make the most out of it, because there's always something else that I would like to do. So, and maybe this is just ADHD, or maybe it is part of creativity, where I've always felt that spiritually, creativity is not just something that I do or that I want to do. It's not just my brain coming up with stuff to express myself or whatever, you know, evolutionary reason, but creativity and art stem from ultimately the creator, the Holy Spirit, who creates, who has created the universe with its gazillion of stars and just this unfathomable depth and width and height, and even in time it just expands in towards the past and into the future for countless years, centuries, and more. And so this unending creativity that roots in, of course, God's eternity and his eternal love, part of some of that we channel, literally we channel it. It expresses itself through us. When we create, we are, to a certain extent, co-creators with God. And this is why art, I think, has so much depth and the ability to touch us and to move us and to change us and to point towards something more than what it expresses itself, or can go beyond the intentions of the writer, like a poet who writes a poem may have certain thoughts and ideas that motivate a particular poem. But when we read it, it may evoke something completely different. So there is also something that is transcendent almost, that goes beyond the intent of the creator, because I think it touches upon the intent of the creator, of God himself. And so there's always more meaning, there's always something else that you can derive from art, from whatever is expressed. Music is the same thing. Why can one song have so many different functions in our lives? When we heard it as a child, it may have helped us feel in a certain way, but later on when we started to understand the words, it got more depth, and then we played it at certain occasions in our life, or we heard it when we were in a certain moment of our life's journey, and then the music gets even more meaning. And so it just keeps adding and adding and adding, even though the song has not changed over all those decades. And anyway, this is why I believe that when I create something, there is always a hint of more. And my brain tends to tap into that desire to do more and to create more. It's like an itch you want to scratch. And in many ways, what I create is a fulfillment of who I feel called to be. I am called to live a creative life, and I love to share it with you. So the downside of that, of course, is that I always have plans and ideas, and I would always like to work on so many different things. And there's so much I would like to learn and explore, but I only have this life, and I only have this day. And during this day, I only have a few hours during which I can do this. And then I'll be tired, I need to recharge. And so there's always this kind of tension between what I would like to do and what I can actually do, which makes it so important, which brings you to the next step, which makes it super important to be intentional and to make choices between I can either do this or I can do that. I have to fight this battle, because sometimes it feels like a battle, every single day. I can either take an hour to cook something new, to look up a recipe on TikTok, to try to follow the steps and to discover something and add to my repertoire of dishes that I can cook. I love doing that. I love cooking. Or I can just whip up something quickly, just use one of my existing recipes, and then I can use the time that I would invest in cooking something elaborate into, for instance, creating a Lego set or building on a Lego set. And I have in the pantry, I've got a table and it's covered with all the bags for the Ghostbusters fire department headquarters, you know, the big New York red fire police station. And I've been in, you know, on step one of that build for 2 months. And every day when I walk out the door of the pantry, I think, man, I should do that. But if I do Lego, then I can't play video games. If I play video games, I can't read a book. If I read a book, I can't watch Fallout on TV. It's always this conundrum of having way too many interests for way too little time. When it comes to my work, because my work is so creative, and like 90% of it is content creation, it's the same thing. I have so many ideas, but what am I going to choose? Now, obviously, I could do just whatever I feel like. And in many ways, that's part of the creative process. It's just follow your intuition. And sometimes you're more in the mood for, I don't know, creating videos than I am for podcasting, etc. So I made a deliberate choice to focus my attention to what serves my mission. Because this is not just self-expression. It's not just for fun. But I do this work because I have a job to do, and that is to help you and to walk with you through life and to give you advice and to entertain you, to communicate friendship and to experience that with you and to explore, etc. So if I think of my mission, my calling, it helps me to make better decisions as to how I use my time. And this is true for your life as well. If you look at everything you do, you see a myriad of things. And some of it is work. Some of it is your responsibilities as a parent or as a student or you name it. Or you have your needs for to stay healthy. You need to sometimes go out and have a walk. You may want to spend some energy into working on your mental health and growing in that respect and processing stuff that happened in your life. It's a lot of stuff, but there are a number of factors in your life that make you choose responsibly. And it's always ordered in a way that matches your values. And if what you do in your work, in your life, in your spare time does not correspond to your own hierarchy of values, but instead you're doing all that because you want to placate someone who kind of imposes his or her values on you, that's the root of tension, that's the root of stress, it's the root of discontent and of frustration even. And if you keep stretching yourself for too long, it might even lead to burnout, discouragement, depression, etc. So it's very important for you and for me to always think, to always come back, not every day, but from time to time, to reflect upon, so what is my hierarchy of values? What is the most important thing that I have to do in my life? And how can I make choices that facilitate that? What's the second most important thing? And if you have that hierarchy of values, it will help you discern what to do and what not to do, even though it is attractive and it is interesting. For instance, like eating. I love good food. I love to eat. I love to cook. But a few weeks ago, I made an assessment of where I am health-wise. And I knew, I had been seeing this for a while, that my overall weight and fitness was going downhill. And the two were related because I was a bit heavier than I used to be. I was more prone to injuries. It made running more difficult. It was easier to get out of breath. And so a few weeks ago, I made an assessment, you know what? I'm going to put my physical health a little bit higher in my top 10 of priorities. And once I did that, once I told myself, hey, it is important for me, for everything I do, that I focus on losing some of that excess weight, that I made the decision to, so I'm going to step back into the routine that actually really helped with this in the past. And I know what that is. It is intermittent fasting. Not because the fasting itself is so efficient, because if you do intermittent fasting, you don't eat for 12 hours or 16 hours in my case, and then you just eat way too much, you're still going to gain weight. But I combine intermittent fasting with calorie counting. I don't like calorie counting. I don't know anyone who likes doing that. The thing is, if you apply intermittent fasting, you reduce the number of times during the day that you eat, which has an immediate effect, of course, on the number of times you have to do calorie counting. If I don't snack, I don't have to look at the back of the bag of chips to see how many calories I overconsumed. or how much salt was in there. If I only have two meals a day instead of three and a snack, then it cuts the amount of time that I have to spend calorie counting into two. It makes it much easier. Plus, the third aspect of this journey towards a better health is because I only have two meals, I'm much more intentional about what I eat. And I want to make sure that I eat lots of protein and lots of vegetables. Protein because it keeps me feel fuller. The vegetables because they have volume, but they don't have the calories. It's mostly water. And so I am much more strategic about the recipes that I cook. For instance, if I can choose, this is a very practical thing. I love pasta. I just got this stash of a guanciale, which is cheek fat or cheek meat from pigs. And for a long time, you could only get that in very expensive stores. So I came across a temporary offer from Lidl, and I bought like six or seven of those blocks of guanciale that will last me months. And so I'm eager to start making all the different recipes, the pasta recipes that feature guanciale. However, I also know the caloric density of pasta is much higher than, for instance, potatoes. So I can have a full plate of baked potatoes and it will be just as much calorie-wise as a small plate of pasta, let alone if I add the guanciale and the olive oil. So it keeps me full much longer. It's in a certain way also more nourishing than a plate of pasta, especially if you use the regular pasta, not the whole grain variant. So it is a much wiser choice for me to, at least for now, as long as I have that losing weight and health at the top of my list of priorities, to just not make pasta. Not yet. Or maybe just during the weekend, once a week, just to kind of give myself a little bit of leeway. But the rest of the week, I'll just focus on potatoes, on complex carbs. And so, again, I can make anything. I love cooking, but I deliberately choose to eat certain foods because it helps me in that journey. If I translate that to other domains in my life, it's a very similar process. And so while I was biking to the zoo, I was going through my mind, I was thinking about this new phase in my mission where we are going to bring you all to this new community that I've set up, and it's now fully operational, but it is still a bit like the second Death Star in a sense that the whole skeleton is there, but it still needs to be filled out. We need to put all the outer surface plates on it, but it's a much better Death Star than the one that we had in A New Hope. Where am I going with this analogy? I'm feeling very, very imperial today. But anyway, so it's still in early access. The community as a whole, in terms of the setup, it all works. But I know that I still need some time to actually get it off the ground and to fill it with content and vibrant discussion. So this is why last week I told you that we were going to bring in a group of beta testers, you could say, a smaller, like a segment of my community that we can... that is hopefully motivated enough to help me make sure this community is everything it needs to be once we open the doors to everyone. So this is a major step for me, because I've been doing Patreon, and also I've been using the distribution system of Patreon for years. So the podcast, the premium podcast that my patrons get every week, is still distributed through Patreon. The regular podcast that some of you are listening to is distributed through my new website, but it used to be on Podbean. And so what I ultimately, of course, want to do is to bring all that into one system, to have one podcast and make it the best podcast that I can deliver every week. But it's a big step. And this is true for the community as well. There are certain things that we can do on Discord. There's very little that we can do on Patreon. But I know that in the new community, oh my gosh, it's going to be so much fun. Because just to give you an example, what the new environment can allow me to do. There is this kind of, looks a bit like Discord. So you have various, what they call circles. And it's areas of interest. And for me, the main community, the big community that I want to ultimately have you also be a member of and a part of, is a community of friends. It's the friends of Father Roderick. Because I feel, this is what I experience. We build up a friendship. There is trust. There is this ongoing relationship. So my main community is my community of friends. And this is a group of people that I have a lot of areas of interest with in common. And it's my passion for movies and everything geek and just the stuff that I talk about in my videos, in my podcasts, and have been doing that for 25 years. So I have created a number of circles that have to do with all these different areas of interest. It's a little bit more focused than it used to be on Discord, because Discord was everything in the kitchen sink. And I feel that actually hurt the community a bit, because it's so broad that there is not one single specific reason to go to Discord unless you just want to hang out. So that there's that. And that is kind of a forum structure. So whenever you want to discuss something like a new movie or something, there is a circle for that. But if you want to, I don't know, I don't have it like ready in my mind, like exactly what those categories are. But if there's another certain topic, there are just areas of interest where you can talk about, people would like to talk about the same things. But that's just one thing. That's just a conversation. The second thing that I can do is everyone who is joining that community can get access to a premium podcast feed that is individual for every member, which means it's not available anywhere else. But you can very easily subscribe to that podcast if you are a member of that community. So this is basically what the one reason that I wanted to do Patreon. Because they have this ability to distribute a podcast and to have patrons have access to it for as long as they're patrons. But the thing is, of course, it's Patreon. They're a commercial company. They need to make money. So they take a cut of those donations. And what I have always seen as an ideal is that I can reinvest 100% of the donations into the work that I do, into the mission. And so wherever I can kind of get, wherever I don't have to share that with a company like Patreon, the more I can reinvest in what I do, because I feel like I'm I have a number of projects that I would like to do for which I don't have the resources now. Like, for instance, making more documentaries and making better videos and having a life where I don't have to do everything myself. Of course, I'm not discounting what Inga does for the community and for the administration, but the creative side is mostly just me doing everything. And so I would love to have more resources so I can do what I do best, and that is not editing. It's mostly just filming and interviewing and making content instead of wrapping it up for you, or wrapping it, I should say, for you and distribute it. So anyway, so that is one of the advantages of this new system, is that you will know that whatever your monthly contribution is, it is going 100% back into what I provide you as a service, it goes back into the mission, and what you can help me distribute to other people that are not yet in my reach right now. So the the third thing that I love about this new community structure and the new website is that I can have live meetups with the community. There is a kind of Zoom-like environment where I can just invite everyone. At a certain hour, you get reminders and everything, and it stays archived. So if you log into the community, you will have all these different sections. One of them is going to be this whole archive of webinars, for instance. Something I would love to do. This has been on my mind for years now, ever since I started TikTok. I figured, how cool would it be if every once in a while, instead of doing like these episode commentaries that I for a while thought was something I should do on TikTok and YouTube, but at the same time, it takes a lot of resources to do that and to do it well. Plus, I have to compete with so many other people that do the same, but what if I could every once in a while do a webinar where I will talk about one particular, for instance, The Bad Batch, Star Wars. That's wrapping this week, Wednesday's final episode. So it means we got, 3 seasons of storytelling in the Star Wars universe that I could comment upon, but I can take 1 hour and do it live and do it as a webinar and have Q&A afterwards. And then it will stay there for if we get people who join the community later and they are Star Wars fans, they can go back to that one webinar and rewatch it. That's something I cannot do on TikTok. Even on YouTube, it's very difficult to offer people that. Of course, whatever I post is there, but to find it is so much more difficult because YouTube and TikTok are open systems, so there's so much content that it's sometimes hard to go back and find. I have this sometimes with people that have recently discovered my anime commentary. Just the other day, I got an email from someone who said, "Hey, I've just discovered your anime content. I think it's amazing. I want to learn more, but I can't find it." And that was just one. It was another confirmation that actually the new system is going to be so much better, because then I can just say, hey, go to the archives, and it's all there. And over time, all those webinars are going to provide so much value. So anyway, that is something that I'm super excited about. And I don't have to do that through Zoom or anything. If I could use Zoom, but then I have to download the episode, re-upload it, tag it, put it in a different, like in its own special feed. It's a lot of work. Whereas with the built-in Zoom type functionality, it's all automatic. So I'm looking forward to that. Another thing that I love about this new community is that I can set challenges. And right now I'm thinking of monthly challenges. Remember that a while ago I had this idea of, well, why shouldn't we just all read the Silmarillion together? And actually a number of you started to read the Silmarillion with me. But the thing was, again, how do you bring that together? How can you keep people accountable if they only go fire up their Discord app, you know, every once in a month or something? But I never had the platform to do that in a more consistent way, and I can so see this work in the future where we can say, hey, it's almost Star Wars Day. Next week, the 4th of May, or actually this upcoming weekend, it's going to be Star Wars Day. Who would be in for a challenge to rewatch, I don't know, the original trilogy? And then we'll all watch it over the course of 3 weeks. And you can do that also for The Lord of the Rings, for instance. And then we'll get together live and we'll talk about it. I just love that. And it's infinite what you can do. But the whole system of setting monthly challenges is built into the system. And you can even get like little rewards or it's like collecting stamps or something. Like when you walk to the Camino, you have this booklet and every stop you get a stamp at the local church. You can do stuff like that as well in the new system. So anyway, it's a lot of new functionality that with Patreon is just not there. And maybe I could scramble, you know, just kind of get it together with a few different services. But then, of course, you are dependent on those platforms. And if they go belly up, like, for instance, with Google, has happened quite a bit, or with TikTok, and it's banned and it's no longer there in large parts of the world, you don't have control over that. And so this is one of the lovely aspects of this new setup, is we're going to have everything on my own platform and nobody can touch it, and I don't have to pay extra for it. So anyway, where was I going with this thought? I was thinking about a lot of these different aspects of this new phase, and I realized that in my mind it's pretty clear now. It took me weeks to think it through. There's this one aspect that I don't have, and that is time and resources. So I need to make choices. I can't do everything at once. And so I made another list of, and it was basically two hierarchies of priorities, two priority lists. One is, what is my mission? And what do the people that I'm sent to need and desire or struggle with? And what do I want to help them with? And the second list was, what are the things that give me the most energy, that make me the most feeling, the most fulfilled and enthusiastic? Because I know that that has always been the driving factor of what I do. I can do a lot of things, but if it doesn't motivate me from within, it will peter out. And so, what are the priorities when it comes to content creation? And so I was on my bike between Arnhem and Bennekom, where I live, thinking about, what does this mean for the choices that I want to make in this new month? And I have a number of conclusions that I would like to share with you. The first one is something that we've already shared or talked about last week, and that is the kind of, I hesitate to call it like this because it might freak you out, but the sunset period of the podcasts. Now, don't worry, this is not going anywhere, because I know how much this podcast means to you, and the same is true for the break. It is a staple in people's week, and they listen to it at various moments of their day. It might be part of their commute. It's part of their ritual. So I don't want to take that away from you. I'd be crazy to, because I know how much it's valued. But at the same time, I've explained last week that what used to be my primary field of mission, in a certain way, podcasting, is no longer fulfilling that function. Podcasting used to be all hip and new and interesting, and a priest who would be podcasting, that is something that you need to listen to. This was 10 years ago or even longer. And so this is no longer for me an area where I make new content, where I make new friends, where I encounter new people. It's very, very, very rare that someone will discover my content through the podcast. And I totally understand, because the competition is killing and the medium itself is still, after all these years, one of the trickiest mediums to spread, because it is, maybe with the advent of AI and podcast analysis through AI, it will be possible to share podcasts a bit easier, or to have some kind of algorithm working for podcasts that will analyze the contents and the behavior of the recipient. But we're not there yet, and I'm not even sure that it will ever get there, because the podcasting market is not where the most profit is being made. So lots of companies will still focus on video, because that's where the money is. Maybe video games, and where that's where the economy works the best right now. So this means for the podcast that what the function of the podcast has changed. It's no longer a medium to make first contact, but it is the social glue that keeps my community together. The podcast, and this is, I was watching a video about the difference between neurotypical and neurodivergent people when it comes to friendship. And it was done by this young lady who is autistic. And she explained it very well. She said, you know, in a regular conversation between neurotypical people, there's always a bit of chit-chat about, it could be about the weather, it could be about sports, or, you know, the topic doesn't really matter because the function of that conversation is not to convey information, to learn something, or to teach, but it is, it's social traffic. This is how you build relationships. It is time you spend together. And that creates trust so that after a while you can get to the deeper topics. This is one of the strengths, I think, of the walk. For many of you, you've been walking these walks every week with me for sometimes years. And so I can now easily switch between a story about, you know, like a day out at the zoo to what is creativity and what has it got to do with the Holy Spirit and why is creativity in its essence, you know, infinite. I can talk like that because we know each other for so long. So that is the function of this chit chat. For neurodivergent people, especially autistic people, it doesn't work like that. Their communication is always intentional. It's literal to a certain extent. You explain something, you convey information. And so they don't like to talk about the weather. Why would we? The weather is what it is. Why would I talk about, I don't know, stuff that is not interesting? It just, we can save time if we just go straight to the matter. So, and that made me think about the function of my podcast. And I think that in 99% of the situations, my podcast is no longer like, hey, let me explain something about the faith to you or about anime or whatever. No, it's just, hey, let's have a chat, let's go for a walk, and let me share with you what I have discovered, what I'm passionate about, and it feels homely, and it builds trust, and it feeds the relationship. Well, if that is the case with podcasting, then the podcast itself, what is the most logical place for the podcast? It's in my community. Because it is literally keeping the community together in a certain way. It gives this weekly appointment where we all listen to the same stuff and we, I don't know, just food, gives food to our conversations and to the community. So it doesn't make sense for me to go out and create more podcasts just to reach new audiences. From a business point of view, of course, this is very different. And I know there are very good reasons to start a podcast today if you have something to sell or you want to reach certain demographics. But in my case, it's not a priority. And it could also detract me from where the area where I am making first contact very successfully, and that is right now on the video platforms, YouTube and TikTok, and to a lesser extent Instagram. But it could become Instagram if I would give it the same attention that I give to TikTok. So, and this is important. This means that because the function of the podcast has changed, I can actually free up some time by making sure that I make the podcast for my community. And then use the other time and also the attention that I have to creating more first contact stuff. And so, but what happens to the chats, you know, about Star Wars and movies and TV shows? Well, you know what? That I'm already doing that. When I go live to record my show, the best parts of going live is not you watching me record a podcast. It's the conversation before and afterwards. It's the chatter. It's just that I'm doing it on a streaming platform, and you know, it's like a live thing, and there are many ways in which we can have it fulfill the same function as the podcast used to do. And again, I'm not talking about the community, I'm talking about this broader audience. And I'm thinking, okay, I need to make even more choices. You may remember that I talked about two ways in which I would like to serve people in a more intense way, and that is in terms of personal growth, because I'm a pastor, and that's what I've been doing with The Walk for years and years and years, so I have some experience to share. And the second one is media, content production, content creation, writing, podcasting, filming, editing, PR, marketing, interviews, you name it. That is the second domain. But that's still two different groups of people who might actually need two different types of content. I can't do both at the same intensity. So I have to make a choice. And my immediate thought was, while I was thinking about this, it's personal growth. This is my most important job as a pastor, is to guide people in their personal growth. Be it spiritual or health-wise or, I don't know, relationships and all that. This is giving me so much motivation. And again, it's already what I'm doing here on the break. What about media creation? Well, media is more of an intellectual decision to offer my services there, because I have 25 years of media creation experience. And there is a need for this everywhere in the world. However, it's also something I've realized. If I just offer my services as, hey, I'm a media coach and I can help you with whatever you want to do, create a YouTube channel or write a book, I'm here for you, that's not going to distinguish me from the millions of other people that are offering the same type of content. So I have to niche down a little bit. And so I'm thinking I'm going to focus on media with a mission, people who really want to change the world with their message, because that's what I hope to do. And so that narrows it down a little bit. And I want to make more specific landing pages and communication that reaches those particular, for instance, parishes or a monastery that would like to have, you know, use social media to bring their message to the people that they want to reach, etc. But I am not able to create another YouTube channel or another podcast for this interest, because it would detract me from being there for the personal growth community. So how am I going to solve this? Well, the solution is for me to rethink my production process in a way that I would advise it to people that I would coach. So this is something that I often do, also in my personal growth, is what if I were my own friend? And because you have your self-talk, but then you also have what you would tell someone you love and someone you want to help. And oftentimes that's a very different dialogue. It's more uplifting, it's more encouraging, whereas our self-talk is usually like, you still have to do this. It's very performative and demanding. What if I would coach myself? And I would come to myself, it sounds a bit narcissistic, but like, hey, Father Otto, can you advise me? And I would like to strengthen my personal branding, because it's the most effective way to build up relationships with a group of people that I want to coach and help in their walk of life, because that requires trust. I feel like personal branding is the best way to do this. It's much more natural and more effective, I think, than if I would just offer courses or, you know, create an institute for personal growth. No, it's just between me and you. And so, but I don't have enough time, and I don't know how to combine it with all my other plans and projects. I would say, hey, if that is truly your most important desire, focus on, laser focus on it. And start with your values, start with your goals, and then work backwards how that translates into what you do. So it's like a reset. A lot of what I've been doing for 25 years has been a result of that thought process, but it's never fixed because you change and your goals change and everything changes. So you have to sometimes just stop and look at what you're doing and asking yourself, is this still what I want to do? It's similar to what I just said a while ago about food. I can cook anything, but if my priority right now is weight loss and getting healthy and fit, I need to make more deliberate choices. So I pick this and not that. Same thing with my media production. And so what I would advise is create one so-called content pillar. And because you cannot possibly do everything at once, why don't you just sit down every Monday and at the beginning of the week and you write one long script, or it could be an article or a chapter of your book if you're a writer, or you work really hard on creating a wonderful podcast with lots of good information and very well constructed, and that's your main content. And then you use that pillar content and you take out small parts that you redistribute over all your social media channels. Because the social media channels are the ways in which you can make first contact, right? But if you make first contact, you want to make sure that what you offer there in terms of content also matches your big product, what you have to offer, your content pillar. And then you could invite people to expand the relationship that they have after first contact by inviting them into a community. And then you feed that community, you serve that community. And then maybe there is a third step where people will say, hey, this is so important for me. I have so much trust in what you do that I would really go beyond this general approach and I need more tailor-made accompaniment. This is where the whole coaching will serve its function, its purpose. So if that is something I would advise to the people I coach, then can I now apply that to myself and rethink my workflow in these terms? And this is what I came up with. I would like to create a content pillar first and foremost. And what is the type of media that makes me the most happy, gives me the most stimulus, and always motivates me and gives me energy? It is the creation of long-form video. It's storytelling through video. It's taking you with me on a journey, whether it is to Santiago de Compostela or to a fantasy festival or to a Star Wars celebration or to wherever in the world. I love to share my experiences in the way I've done it at the very beginning of my media career through the Catholic Insider podcast, where it was an audio documentary. And this long-form storytelling based on exploration and discovery has always been a constant factor in what I do, and it gives me the most... It's the most rewarding stuff, because those Catholic Insider episodes, you can still listen to them today. They're evergreen. And the same is true for the TV shows that I've made. 80% of them still work today. They're there for the long run, and that's what I want. So if my content, my pillar content, is long-form video, then I need to construct it in such a way that I can also derive shorter content from it that will appeal to the people that I want to reach to make first contact. I don't have to do that for my community because they already know me, but I need to make sure that the short content leads to the longer form content and to community. So what is the best approach? Let's make it very specific. a week and a half ago, I was at this fantasy festival and I interviewed about 10 people, 10 different people. Short interviews, but every interview had something valuable in it. And I sat down yesterday before I went to the zoo and I wrote the first sketch of a script. Like, this is how I could tie these interviews together, add some of my personal thoughts to it, and turn it into a story. That was so amazing to do that. Because finally I had one specific story that I could use to tie everything I filmed that day together. And it reminded me how much I enjoyed working for TV, because that's what I would always do. I would go on vacation, film for 2 weeks, and then I would sit and think, how can I turn this into a story that keeps people watching? And then when I finally was able to publish the show and it aired, so many people loved it and would rewatch it even afterwards on demand and still tell me how much that stays with them, that story. So I still have people that tell me, oh man, I watched your three-part series about the trip that you made to China and looking for your roots. That was amazing. And I've gotten to know you so much better. So I know what the impact can be of that type of content. So what I'm thinking now is, if I create that, and I don't know exactly how much time it will take, that's still for me to figure out, but I gather it will probably take me about, I don't know, 5 days to put it together as a documentary. Then to create the smaller content for Instagram and TikTok and whatnot is just a matter of isolating certain parts. So for instance, if I have included 10 interviews in that final production, it means that I have 10 clips that I can select from those interviews and post those, referring people to the actual final documentary. Which means that with one content pillar, I can create 10 days of content for my socials. It's a totally different way of thinking. And then I can still select the parts that will appeal to my TikTok followers. And because I do a lot of geeky stuff, hopefully that will be a match. But in the end, it prevents me from going in all directions and trying to and make documentaries and make anime commentary and do Star Wars stuff. It's the opposite. I start with this one story, this one message, and then I create all sorts of pointers to that content pillar. So, and the script can then also even be repurposed as a chapter of a book. You know, like Geek Priest was in fact a collection of shorter stories. Every chapter was about a certain journey that I made or an event that I went to. And it was fun to read because it was so episodic in its nature. So it's maximizing the effort that I put in that one content pillar so I can turn it into so many different types of content. And the one thing that kept me from pursuing this was this fear of disappointing my podcast listeners. It's like, man, but I need to do the break. I need to do the walk. But now I think, well, but that there's no reason for me not to do this. But why don't I create this podcast just for my community? That's where the podcast has its place. And that means that I don't have to worry too much about, you know, making like a morning type radio show like The Break, or it's more of a meditative walk. The reason that people listen to my podcast is because they want to connect with me. And not to be entertained and not to be informed, because they can get that anywhere else. So once I realized this, it freed me up. It's like, oh my God. Then now it all makes sense. I can let go of this idea that I should do podcast X, podcast Y, long form video, this short form stuff like that. It's just, there's not enough time. And I've tried this for 2 years and I never got anywhere because I was thinking from the perspective of all these different ideas, everything I wanted to do, instead of starting with my values, my primary goals, and my primary target audience. What about the media content? How do I get in on the radar of people that I can help with their content production? Well, that's where, again, what's the purpose? It's to train professionals and to help them. If the people, the geeks, my friends, most of them, I'm just guessing, like 90%, 95% of them are not interested in getting help with their content production, because it's not their field of work. But what is the place where you can find professionals? It's on LinkedIn. And it is through my newsletter, where I can explain what I do. I can tell the story. Hello. These guys are looking at me as if they see a ghost. Like, why is he talking into this microphone? What? They're a little bit above the age of regular podcast listeners. So anyway. So, and now I'm distracted. They're not part of my target audience. So, no wonder they don't understand what I do. So, if I apply the same reasoning to how can I best use my resources, it's much easier for me to do written content, to reach out, to find people to coach, and to get people interested in my content production community, than it is to try to do this through the TikToks or through the podcast. So for that group, it's going to be written content. I can still make pillar content. I can still, for instance, this is what I've now learned to do, is to create a book. It's nothing special, but I can create small books with tips, with short stories, with experiences, and then use that as pillar content to reach out through LinkedIn and the newsletter and say, hey, here's a small segment of my book. I provide some value, and I say, if you want more, download the book, get on my mailing list. And then every once in a while, I'll invite you for a webinar, and we'll talk about this particular topic. So how do I write a book in 5 days? And I will tell you how I did it. And then this is how I can establish a relationship on a professional level. But I don't have to do the same thing I do for my friends and for my fellow geeks, also for these media professionals, because it's just, they'd use different channels. They probably don't even have time to listen to an hour-long podcast every week. There would be zero interest in that. So all in all, I'm thinking everything is falling in place. And so next step, finally, to wrap things up, because I'm going over time here with this episode. What will I do? I'm going to continue, as I've mentioned before, until the third quarter, which is July, with the way things are right now. So we will still get the episodes in your podcast feed. If you're a patron, then nothing changes. But in the meantime, for 2 months, I can focus on helping you move over to the new community. If you're not a patron yet, I can invite you to come and see and experience how much this community and this new podcast feed will be something really worth your time, and maybe also will give you an incentive to join and to help me do this by becoming not a patron anymore on Patreon, but to become a patron through my Father Roderick platform. So we'll have 2 months, and then gradually we'll start to kind of sunset the public podcasts. I'm not sure, maybe we'll keep it around in the way it is, or occasionally post an episode. I'm not sure, we'll see what the demand is. But what I'm going to focus on is to provide the best podcast every week, to be there every week for my community. And to do that in the same way that you know me now. Personal, real, authentic, hopefully also entertaining, and definitely giving you some life experience and some food for thought. so that it can nourish your life. All right, let me know what you think. You can still, of course, reach me through social media and through the Discord server if you're a patron. Thank you so much for listening to me explaining all this. And I'm excited about this next trajectory. So again, 2 months. It's going to be early access for a small subset of followers, so we can make sure that everything works. And then in July, we're going to open the floodgates and we'll bring everybody in. And in the meantime, just stay put, nothing changes. And I'll still be there for you every single week. God bless.